And our guest tonight, Jose Escamilla, and your phone calls. We'll be back with all of you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're back with Jose Escamilla. Jose, if you're taking pictures, trying to capture rods using still photography, if you are using normal film or digital, modern digital equipment, is there a difference?
Yes, there is, because, you know, when you're using film, you have a different aspect. You know, you're not dealing with CCD technology and artifacts, because artifacts do occur on electronic video camera technology. But when you're using film, you've got a frame of film. I mean, what you see is what you get. And we do have rods, and I never disclosed this yet, but we have rods in 3D shot on IMAX film.
In 3D?
In 3D on IMAX. And if anyone's seen an IMAX film, man, I mean, that's the most amazing thing. But there's a movie that IMAX released called The Journey of Man. And there's a scene where there's these two statues in the middle of a pond. And, man, a rod flies through. I was watching it in 3D, man, and I go, holy moly, man, and this is IMAX film. I mean, you know.
Holy moly.
It was great. I mean, you know, what more of a acknowledgement do you get? I mean.
It comes right out at you, huh?
Right there. It was really, I mean, I can't wait to get, you know, my hands on that footage. I mean, it's just amazing.
All right, let's go to some of the phones. Let's pick it up by going to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Jose Escamilla, our guest. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Kurt. I'm calling from New Mexico. This is on XM.
Hi, Kurt. Welcome.
I'm a time zone traveler from Phoenix. I got a couple of observations. He said that they're seen in space, so obviously they're entering our atmosphere.
Yes.
So with no protection, these little rods or big rods are entering atmosphere. That would take a lot of power for something like that to do that. We can't even do that. You know, without shields. Space shuttle and that be able to go through like tornadoes.
Tell us about the strength of that, if you can, Jose. The fact that if they are coming from outer space, or if they're up there in space, how do they come back without burning up?
Well, that would be one for scientists, I guess. But the way I'm looking at it, I mean, they appear to. I mean, there's ether in space, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's an ether value there. I think they travel through the ether, possibly. I mean, it's kind of hard to judge on that one. I mean, all I have is the visual evidence. That, you know, that's what I do. I really wouldn't even begin to tell you what I would feel on that. I mean, it's as much of a big question as anyone else. I mean, you know, all I've got is the visual evidence taken by NASA, you know, on that respect. So I would have no idea where to go with that one.
Are other people throughout the planet trying to capture these objects, these creatures, or are you out there with just a few other people trying to do it?
No, actually, I have hundreds of people worldwide that are filming, and, I mean, I've got Japanese people that are out there actually trying to capture one. So this thing is just snowballed into a major phenomenon that's, you know, taken over, and I get footage all the time, George.
What do you think they eat, Jose? They don't eat people, do they?
No, maybe they feed on adrenaline or something.
Huh.
I don't know. It's, you know, there is evidence that there is bacteria and a kind of a plankton up in the upper atmospheres. I mean, our own army or military, they're out there spraying chemical things in the upper atmospheres, and they actually fessed up one time. I read an article that they said, well, what we're doing is we're spraying chemicals up there trying to kill bacteria that exist in the upper atmospheres, you know. So maybe these things thrive on that, or maybe plankton in the oceans, because they do seem to have some kind of a life cycle in the oceans.
All right, but, so they're in the water quite a bit as well then.
Oh, yeah.
All right, east of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, good morning. Russell here in East York, Ontario.
Oh, Russell.
What popped into my mind when listening to Jose's comments was the need to get some specialists on a future program that deals with the current state-of-the-art camera technology that goes to the highest shutter speed possible known to man. What we're doing with digital technology creating magnetic field filters that will capture all sorts of energies coming into the lens, and how digital receptors can receive these energies and record what in fact is being received above and beyond any film. It seems to me we need an index, for example, of the very shutter speed you need for certain insects, so you have this kind of a registry to go back to, saying you can capture this still image of an insect at this shutter speed, and compare those things with the film versus the digital or beyond.
Maybe it's being done. Is it being done, Jose, like that?
I don't know if it's being done. I mean, I know that there was a rod captured in Albany, New York back in 2003, and I think I was on with Art about that back then. And the military took over that footage, and they were investigating. They had forensic scientists that were looking at the digital aspects of it, and this thing was right over, you know, New York Albany International Airport, flying on their airspace, and they thought it was a cruise missile at first. So I know, or I practically think that NASA probably knows something about these things, that they got them on film. You know, they got them on ultraviolet infrared cameras.
I think that was video taken by a weather television crew.
Yeah, it was a camera guy that was getting a backdrop.
Yes.
You know how they do the weather report?
Yes, exactly.
Getting a backdrop of a jet taken off from Albany Airport as a nice little, you know.
It looked like also a Stinger missile.
Yeah.
It had that shape to it, right?
Yeah, and the FBI came in and confiscated the tape.
Yes, you're right.
Grilled the camera guy. They were trying to make him say that he faked it. You know, they held him for like, you know, 40, 50 hours or something, and they tried to make him say that he had faked it. And I guess the military intelligence officers from Fort Hood, Texas, took the footage. And they were doing some analysis on it, and nothing was ever.
We never heard anything more about that. That's worth an update.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Maybe we'll follow up with that.
I think NASA has the best UFO footage in the world. As a matter of fact, I've seen it.
Well, ask Richard Hoagland about that.
There you go.
West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Rob. I live in Tucson. I'm driving truck driving in Illinois tonight.
Okay, Rob, welcome.
Hi, I've got a two-part question for you guys. Is Tucson a good place to see these things? And if so, I have a VHS-C video camera. As an amateur, how would I go about filming them and then viewing them later?
Okay, VHS-C cameras, depending on what kind of shutter setting you have, I hope you have the manual, because you have to go in there and manually set the highest registry on the shutter setting. Otherwise, you're going to get motion blur on anything you film. But, yeah, we do have footage from Phoenix, Tucson, Tempe, surrounding areas, but give it a shot, man. And you're a truck driver. I've always gotten a lot of eyewitness reports from truck drivers that have seen rod objects, you know, broad daylight, and, you know, so give it a shot.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate that.
Sure.
Next up, Wild Card Line, your turn on Coast to Coast with Jose Escamilla. Hi there.
Good evening, George.
Hi.
My name's Claire. I'm in Sacramento. And Hoosier.
Oh, is this Claire Mix?
Yes, it is.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I did your cartoons on your website. But I do and have taken rods extremely seriously for that you know how many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I still tell my students about rods. I bring it into the classroom. And my students always say, what can we do as listeners of Coast to Coast and as students in the classroom? What do we do to get the scientific community to take this seriously? Because this is something that I think is not just a phenomenon. I mean, these exist. Why aren't we studying them?
Even if they're special insects that nobody's recorded yet, they should be looked at.
Exactly. That's my point. To me, fine if they're from another world, another solar system, whatever. I mean, if I was an entomologist or some kind of scientist, I'd be going, what is this? You know, give me a grant. I want to study this.
Well, you know, the curious thing about Dr. Wooten out of London, the entomologist that created the prototype of what he felt was the ancestor of today's insects, we sent him, you know, footage and photos of these things, and he never responded back. But, you know, here's the thing. There's a big crutch, man. I mean, I've got scientists from Denver, from here in L.A. that they don't want to stick their neck out because, you know, they get funded, you know, to do scientific evaluations of the normal situations, you know. You get into the paranormal stuff like this, and they'll lose their funding and their credibility and their grants and everything else. So, you know, it's kind of what has to happen is we have to educate and bring it forth like we're doing. I mean, you know, it's not only me. There are a lot of people out there that are bringing forth, you know, footage of UFOs and other things that are appearing all over the world. And the scientific community just has this crutch, man, to lose funding. I mean, I had a scientist that was on a TV special with me, didn't want to be named or seen because he would lose his funding. He would lose his credibility and everything else. So it's kind of hard.
It almost makes Rod more interesting that way because it makes me think that there's something that the government or somebody does know about Rod that they don't want anybody else to know about.
Well, obviously, we've got footage from NASA, like I said, you know, and I keep bringing that up because they're out there, man. I mean,
well, if they know about it, Jose, why keep it a secret? I mean, these things obviously aren't hurting people, are they?
Well, it's just like the UFO phenomenon. Why keep that secret? Why say that it's not real? Why, you know, why?
Well, I think that would have more ramifications on people. I think there are some people on this planet that couldn't handle that.
I know. Well, that's
the thing. If you told them that there are special insects or animals that fly, we just found them. I don't think people would go crazy over that unless they said thousands of people have been hit by these things.
Unless Jose is right and that they are from another solar system.
True.
Yeah,
true.
Here's the thing. You go to my website, and I have a connection, a link to a website called ToledoConnection.com. And I have a lady that's been out there, Deborah. She's been checking out the Pathfinder on Mars. You know, it's a probe that we sent up there. And it's taken photographs of UFO objects and rod objects on Mars. Okay, and I'm not saying they're rods, but they are definitely looking like rods, and you're seeing dome-shaped objects, and these are pictures taken by our Pathfinder. So I don't know. I can't answer these questions, you know. I mean, whatever the situation is with NASA and our government and everything else, I mean, all I'm doing is just presenting the evidence as it is, you know, all I can do, much like other people. But we should check it out. I mean, what if these things do have the capabilities? You know, because a lot of animal tests that they do on animals, I mean, you know, you got cures for cancer and all that kind of stuff. Maybe these things, their metabolic rate is so high. I mean, they're able to traverse the ocean and the sky at such speeds. Maybe their metabolic rate is so high that they could possess maybe cures that we never even fathomed yet, you know?
Do you get upset, Jose, if and when people accuse you of trying to fake all this?
Well, George,
are you beyond that now?
I used to take it personal. I mean, back in the early 90s, man, when I first came out with this stuff, I was on these chat lectures and things, and, you know, they were accusing me, and, man, I used to get angry. But you know what? I learned you can't stress over the stuff. You got to stay grounded because, the minute that you take it personally, you start slam blasting, then your credibility also goes down the tube. So I learned, keep it, you know, take it on the chin, just keep researching, keep presenting the evidence as it appears, and keep duplicating, you know, the documenting of these things, and eventually somebody's going to catch on to it, you know.
Jim Peters, whom you mentioned, is he still with the Colorado Mutual UFO Network, do you know?
No, actually, he's living here in Studio City. He got married.
Oh, is he? Okay, well, I wanted to read a quote, and he says... He said this in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
The more I analyze the tapes, and these are yours, the more bugs become bugs, the more birds become birds, and the more rods become rods. Recognizing the fact that the rods were nothing like anything I've ever seen before, I'm convinced by the hundreds of hours of tape I've analyzed that the rods seem to be a unique phenomenon. That was convincing him.
Exactly. And he actually, once he started hanging with me in the basement, I was living in Denver in those days, once he started seeing the footage for what it really was, because, you know, he was with MUFON. He was the Section State Director, Assistant State Director of MUFON in Colorado. And he came in, and he thought, it's probably easily explained. But after he saw what they are, and he realized that, look, this is definitely an anomalous object that we need to check out. He actually had visuals of these things with the naked eye, you know. And Jim has been really instrumental in a lot of the research that we've done. And, you know, it's just been great.
Next up, let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air with Jose. Hi there.
Hey, George. Hey, Jose. This is Darren. I'm calling from Springfield, Missouri.
Hello, Darren.
560 KWTO. I've got a question for Jose. I was wondering, is there anyone working on an apparatus or any kind of trapping system to catch one of these rods?
Okay, well, we went to the Cave of the Swallows in Mexico, and I had a Japanese crew from Nippon TV. And these guys... I mean, you have to look at this pit. It's 1,600 feet deep. You can stick the Empire State Building in there, you know, from top to bottom. And they dropped, they had ultrasound devices. They were trying to knock these things down with them. And then they had this 20 by 4 foot plywood apparatus they put together. And they put flypaper glue on it, okay?
Okay.
And they lowered it down into the cave. And what they were trying to do is catch something that would stick to this, you know, plywood thing. But then the local Indian people there, they went, you know, went right at us. They said, look, we have precious insects. We have birds. We have parrots. We don't want you to kill the, you know, the natural things that are there. So you guys got to stop this. But they definitely tried. And, you know, there was a lot of rod activity that day. But, no, they haven't been able to catch one. And like I said, probably in some marine lab somewhere, there's probably a gelatinous thing that's probably a rod as an unknown gelatinous creature. But now there are people out there trying to catch them, but how do you catch something like this? I mean,
yeah, that's the question, you know. It just seems to me like the next step after catching them on film for 11 years for you would be to actually catch one, physically catch one.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I'd like to also... Now that I've seen them on IMAX cameras, I'd like to go back to the cave.
I'd like to see that footage myself.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, you can get the DVD.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's available.
Can you supply that information?
The Journey of Man, it's called.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Okay, appreciate you being in the program. You know, the large ones could be confused for dragons during the old days.
You know, they did have visuals of... reports of dragons in London and other parts of the world as, you know, in the 1900s. I mean, this is our era. You know, it's not like ancient times, you know, before Christ, this kind of thing. I mean, you know, they were actually seeing flying dragons. As a matter of fact, in 1896 in Crawfordsville, Indiana, the whole town witnessed a creature that was 30 feet long in broad daylight for 3 days straight. They said it didn't have a head or a tail, and it withered through the air like as if it was swimming. And it was serpentine, and everybody in the whole town saw it, you know, the police, the mayor, the preacher, everybody. And they called it a sky monster, and that's documented, you know, 1896. So, you know, they've been around.
They have been around. Hey, tell me, what's going on with Borderlands Network? You got that off the ground yet?
Oh, well, you know, yes, I have. You know, I have hundreds of subscribers that have already joined. And want the Borderlands Network. And let me explain what it's about. A couple of years ago, I got tired of doing TV shows because, you know, they always do their own spin. They don't give you a shot where you can present all your stuff. You know, I've always wanted to do a TV show where I could present everything that I've got as opposed to letting them do their own spin and their own thing. And they say, you know, just like proof positive. I mean, you know. So I said, you know what we need? We've got ESPN for sports. We've got CNN for news. Let's put together the All Paranormal Network. This would be a venue. It would be great for us, not only UFO investigators, but other paranormal people, man. You got ghosts. You got Loch Ness Monster.
Sure, great idea.
Be a great venue. So I approached the Dish Network and DirecTV, and I found out what it would take to purchase my own satellite time. And, you know, it's an astronomical amount of money.
Well,
but
finish the story. Finish the story when we come back, Jose. We'll do that. We'll finish the story about your push to try to get your own paranormal network going. We'll take the rest of your phone calls as well when we come back. Then I'll have 2 hours of open lines. Special hotline I am opening up tonight, too. I'll explain that later on tonight. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll also talk about the two pictures that he sent us, the Battle of L.A. If you have a computer, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Look at that. It appears that they've got a light series of spotlights on some kind of an object, and it's not a plane. And our special guest this hour, Jose Escamilla, your phone calls. The next hour, a couple hours of open lines. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jose, let's talk again about the Borderlands Network, your all paranormal network. You were saying that you had been to the Dish Networks and DirecTV. What did they tell you?
Well, you know, it's all a matter of economics. It always is about the money. You know, if you can show them that you can lease the satellite space, you know, for $5 billion a year, you can go on it. You know, and, it takes money to put something together like that. But the good news is the technologies are catching up to us on the Internet. And there's a company that's coming out, man, pretty soon. I can't really discuss too much on it. But the Borderlands Network may launch on the Internet where people can download, like, for example, a 1 or 2 hour movie, paranormal.
Oh, yeah, the technology's there.
In 5 seconds. I'm talking, you can download, as long as you have a DSL or broadband.
So it's not real time. It's just, boom, it's there.
I'm talking, boom, and you're watching your movie, DVD quality, 5-to-1 channel surround. So this may become a reality eventually. You know, it's just a matter of time, and I'm not giving up on it. I'm still going to do it.
Well, you've got a lot of the programming, and that's what they need. They need the software.
I'm telling you, we're going to present the stuff that nobody's airing. I mean, Sci-Fi Channel. It's science fiction, man. We're going to do paranormal, man.
Find a live rod, Jose. You know what that'll do?
Well, yeah.
Back to the phones. Wildcard Line, you're on Coast to Coast with Jose Escamilla. Hi there.
Hi, this is Sylvia in Boise, Idaho.
Hi, Sylvia. Go ahead.
Well, I'm wondering, Jose, I've noticed more and more people are seeing things that they've never experienced before. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's possible that these rods are part of a spirit world, if you will, or other dimension, that our spirit world and corporeal world are merging?
Well, you know, I did early on. I had Native Americans that I was working with, and we had medicine men do circles on these things, and one of the elders told us. He said, the white rods are like our prayers.
Mm-hmm.
The dark rods are like our thoughts. And the different colored rods, we don't know what they're doing. But they've been saying that it's of a spiritual nature also. And, I said, I am only presenting the visual evidence. I have no idea what these things are, but it could be.
Well, I feel like that maybe these worlds are merging to become one. We're seeing so many things in the spirit world now, and who knows what they are seeing from our world.
Exactly. Well, probably to them, we're in total slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
These things are traveling so fast, we're probably like snails, But they're definitely checking us out, and they've been doing it for a long time. So I think, with the advent of ultraviolet and infrared and video camcorders, we're starting to catch things, and not only rods. I mean, like that gentleman said earlier, maybe if we could get cameras that we could shoot on higher speeds.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine shooting at, 100,000 frames per second, and then film into the sky, and then slow it down to our perception, because our perception of reality basically is at 24 to 30 frames per second. So anything above that, in the millions of frames per second, we're not going to see it. But if we bring that reality down to us by using high-speed cameras, we're probably going to see things that chase rods,
I think our reality is going to be changing in ways we can't imagine.
And I look forward to it.
I do, too.
It's going to, put a lot of debunkers out there, at rest.
Yes, it will. It was good talking to you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. The two pictures you supplied us, the 16-millimeter footage of the Battle of L.A., is that new footage? I thought I had seen these pictures before.
Well, no. George, part of my paranormal network thing was I was going to produce some original programming. One of them is a movie called UFO. So I wanted to do this. I wanted to put together a UFO movie with a total different spin than from what all the networks do. The networks take all our footage from all over the world and they sensationalize it. Could this be an alien creature coming in? So I said, I'm going to start checking things out and see what's out there. Well, I found this 16-millimeter footage of what appears to be, actually, it definitely must be, because there's this object that, and this is footage from 1942. It's Army footage. I allocated it from a secret source a couple of years ago. But what it is, the Battle of L.A. occurred in February of 1942, right after Pearl Harbor. There were, we were scared, man. There was a lot of things that were happening. The Japanese attacked some oil wells right off the shores here in Southern California. And we were having blackouts because there were things flying over, you know, the west coast here. So one night, these nine or ten objects flew in, and one of them hovered right over Culver City in Santa Monica. And they shot at this thing for an hour and a half with 12-pound anti-aircraft artillery, shrapnel artillery. And, you know, shrapnel, you don't have to hit the object. You can you can hit 10, 20, maybe 30 feet away destroy whatever's there.
Yes.
This thing just hovered there for about an hour.
The flak would get it.
Huh?
We call it the flak would get it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was a lot of homes and businesses destroyed. Some people got killed, you know. But this thing, it was witnessed by millions of people back in 1942. And it flew down to San Pedro and then came back. And it fired at it again, and then it took off over the ocean. There was only, up until now, there was only been one photograph that was taken by an L.A. Times reporter of the event, and it has the searchlight beamed onto this object.
That's the one you sent us.
No, what I sent you is footage from the 16-millimeter film that I allocated, that I found.
Okay, so it's not one and the same.
No, it's a different view, viewpoint. And you can go on my website. I was trying to get this to you guys in time to have it on your website, and I'll probably email it to Tom anyway. You know, so
I'd like to see it.
But you can see a preview of it, and it's this is part of this film that I'm making, and it's incredible footage, man.
All right, back to the phones. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George and Jose.
Hi.
This is Chris. I'm just a couple minutes south of you guys in Tustin, California.
Mm-hmm.
George, first of all, I just want to say thanks for carrying on the voice of truth of what's really going on in our world today. Jose,
yes.
Since you're talking about UFOs, I was on a houseboat back in 91 in Arizona, and me and my brothers had an incredible close encounter. But back to the rods, those are just incredible. The rods down in Mexico, where the birds are actually chasing them.
Right, the Cave of the Swallows,
Yeah. I mean, those things are incredible.
Have you ever seen a bird try to swallow a rod?
Yes, we got footage.
You
from
do?
The Cave of the Swallows. It's a sparrow. It's a swallow. I'm sorry. And, you know, we showed this footage where this base jumper flies, you know, is jumping down. Now, remember, the terminal velocity is about 80-90 miles an hour, you know. This guy is falling in, about to open his parachute, and a swallow emerges from the side of the cave and almost catches up to him to peck him on his foot because, you know, they're very protective of their nest. But this thing, the swallow just, boom, goes right after him, almost catches up to him. This guy's probably doing, you know, 89 miles, 90 miles an hour straight down. There's another sequence in that same piece of footage where a swallow comes out after a rod object that flies through, and it tries to catch it, but it doesn't. And it's amazing footage. I mean, and this rod object's about a foot long.
If you captured one, would you try to keep it alive?
If it's a possibility, I mean, where would I put it?
I don't know. I don't know how you take care. Do you put it in an aquarium with a top?
Possibly an aquarium, yeah.
You know, and does it smash itself against the insides? I don't know.
I'll tell you something funny, George.
Because I don't think they have legs, though. They just have these little fins, right?
Yeah, they have the undulatory waveform, much like a cuttlefish or a squid. You've seen those fins that squids have?
Yeah, right.
They can move really fast, but in the movie Ice Age, the cartoon?
Yeah.
There's a rod object embedded in ice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's funny. Somebody over at DreamWorks put a rod.
You know, DreamWorks not too far from where you are.
Yeah, they're right next door to me.
Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
Monroe, Michigan.
Okay, sir, take it away.
Yeah, my name's Mike, and my 13-year-old son got pictures of these flying worms, basically, flying rods.
Uh-huh.
We were sitting outside, and he was taking a picture of the Big Dipper, and he kept saying something was flying in front of him, and he showed me a picture of it. It's about a foot and a half long, like a snake. It's a still shot. you can see the tail and the head of it, and then the appendage around it.
You need this. You need this picture, Jose.
I'd like to see it. Send it to me.
I've sent it to you. You even responded to him in his email there.
I did.
They put it in Channel 2 News and on Detroit.
WJBK, my old stomping grounds.
Yeah, and he 3 days later, he got another two of them that come over the fire pit. He's got them in action.
Oh, my. Are you saying, though, that you sent one to Jose, so he's got it somewhere?
Yes, I've even sent it to your show, too. But Jose is definitely...
I haven't seen it.
Now, he has it on a website. My son does, if you want me to mention it.
I'll tell you, I'll put you on hold, and we'll get your website, okay?
Most definitely. We always like to check because I get hundreds of emails and posts.
Okay, Tommy, take care of that. We'll get the website.
And I
always like to look at it.
I did respond, but, you know.
I'm sure you get so many.
Yeah.
I mean, like I do with emails. I don't know how many emails we get every week. It's thousands and thousands. But Wildcard Line, welcome to the show. You're up.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yes, this is Peter from Pennsylvania. Currently stuck in traffic in South Carolina. I'm a truck driver.
What are you doing stuck in traffic at this hour?
It's on 85 down here in South Carolina. Anyway, it's blocked up. Anyway, George, my question for your guest is, by the way, I'm a huge fan of your show. It keeps me awake all night,
Thank you.
I really appreciate your show. Hey, my question for your guest is had he had a chance to get a biologist to classify this life form?
Well, the closest that we've gotten was the marine zoologist here in the L.A. Museum of Natural History. They said it could be a jelly plankton of some kind, you know, a gelatinous type of creature. That's what they kind of saw, you know, but until they have a specimen, that's a difficult thing. Until we get a specimen, we can't really classify what it is. But we've traced these things back as far as we could go, all the way down to 500 million years ago. There was a creature called Anomalocaris that it was like the top predator, was the biggest predator 500 million years ago. All of a sudden, it vanished. And did you know that there are squid that can come out of the ocean and they fly? They actually glide in the air. I didn't know this kind of stuff until I was talking to these zoologists, marine biologists, you know? So there is a possibility that Anomalocaris might have evolved into Proto-Pterygote. Who knows? But I'd love to find a specimen, man. If there's anybody out there that has anything resembling close to this, that's, works in some lab, by all means, contact us. Jeez.
Yeah, I was talking to some woman a couple of years ago, and all of a sudden a bug flew right down her mouth, and it was a disgusting thing, because, I mean, what do you do when something like that happens? That's how you're going to end up catching one of these critters. Something like that's going to happen.
Eat that sucker, man, and I'll never be able to test it.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, hello. Jose Escamilla.
He's there.
And George Norrie. Jose, I talked to you back in May of 1999, right after I got off my radio show in Cleveland, and I was driving home and I was listening to you talk to Art about rods.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard you say undulating and sea creature, I completely flipped out. I don't know if you remember this conversation. I think I've talked to you before about this. But August the 11th, 1985, I was in Yuma, Arizona. I was an engineer at a TV station and was a disc jockey at a radio station there. And... if I didn't see this, if the mother of my daughter wasn't there and saw this with me, I would have thought that I was nuts. So I'm glad that Sherilyn, I'm glad that she saw this also, because what we saw in Yuma, Arizona, and this is like 10, 30, 11 o'clock at night, was undulating. It moved like a sea creature, and it was translucent. And my main question, because this is a little different situation, there was four spheres. Now, when I drew the picture and talked to her about it, she said that these spheres emitted light. I said that they were silver. And they were like a little bit bigger than basketballs. And there was three in a row and one off to the side. So that there was four spheres. And they were like pointed, but there was like one missing or it made an arrow. Do you see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So there's four spheres, but if there's five, it would have been two on each side and one in the middle like an arrow. But there was one sphere missing. And the thing moved undulating while the balls remained like level. Now I saw this for myself, but it's hard for me to like... realize how it happened or explain it. All I can say was this thing was like 25 feet long. And Story Musgrave saw something like this in space, but he didn't see the spheres. It was just a like a flying carpet.
Right.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Like what Story Musgrave saw?
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
You know, this had spheres in it. And so this is really weird because August 11th, 75 was the first time I ever saw a UFO, and that was in Clovis, California. So here, 10 years later to the date, And my ex tells my daughter, who is going to be 21 years old here in June, that the very first day we had her outside, which was that night, the very first day we had her outside, because she was a preemie and she was born 2 months early, mm-hmm. and this thing flew over our house. The very first night we took her outside with her little heart monitor on while we were watching it. So he goes, the first time we ever had you outside, a UFO flew right over our house. Now, this thing, we're right in town in Yuma, Arizona. We had a little house on 25th Street. This thing flew directly over our roof and cleared the roof by just a couple of feet. Now, Sherilyn, she walked out into the middle of the yard and looked up, like, on her tiptoes to look up over the roof to see this thing as it went. And she goes, oh, my God, did you see that? And I was just so in shock in my chair that I couldn't really, you know, say much except for I did, and I don't know what that was. But when I talked to Art Enyu about it, he said, you know, it just seemed like something out of this world.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like it was part of this universe or this world. It was really bizarre. It left me with a really weird, you know, feeling.
And, you know, this is one of the things, you know, okay, so people are trying to say, well, they're just misfilmed insects and things, you know, but you know what? I've had hundreds and hundreds of eyewitness reports in broad daylight, nighttime, that have seen these things. And, you know, the eyewitness reports, you just cannot discount that because, you know, it's real. It's a reality that exists among us. And we just need to keep checking it out. Eventually, I'm wholeheartedly feel that eventually we will get a specimen or a handle on what's going on with these things. But, thanks. It's good to talk to you again, man.
It's too bad you don't have a lot of biologists behind you on this, Jose, doing whatever they can, scurrying the countryside to try to get one of these specimens.
That would be great, man. I'm telling you, I'd be able to move to the next project.
I wonder where they habitat. Where do you think they live, they reside?
Well, we do know that they do have some kind of a life cycle, you know, in the water, in the oceans.
I mean, they gotta breed somewhere. They got to grow up somewhere.
Yeah, well, they use the atmosphere like a liquid, too. So, and then, obviously, we've got things coming in from space, so I don't know.
I mean, do you think they spend most of their time in the atmosphere or on the ground?
They appear
in
to
the
do
water.
Both. They appear to do both. You know, like I said, we do have footage of these things coming out of the ocean, man, and coming into the ocean.
Puzzling.
So.
Prior to you doing this, mm-hmm. 1994, was anybody finding these things or reporting these?
Yes.
In the past, they were?
Yes. And I call him the Rod Grandfather. I'm the Rod Father.
Who's the grandfather?
The grandfather is Trevor James Constable.
And who is he?
He is a gentleman that was filming, photographing UFOs and amoeba-looking things. He called them critters back in the late 50s using infrared film. And he caught rods and other things that are up in our upper atmosphere.
Did they baffle him as well?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, he's been instrumental in my research. I mean, this man is just he's a genius. I mean, the guy is an incredible person.
Have you ever talked to him?
All the time.
All right, so you two are close now.
Matter of fact, George, you ought to get Trevor on there. He's got some amazing things he could do.
Well, I'll let you set it up. Maybe
we'll
get
two
of you back.
Let's do that.
Okay, my friend, good luck with everything you're working on. Visit his website, roswellrods.com. When do you think you can pull off this paranormal network?
Anytime very soon. In the meantime, I'm doing a movie called UFO, and you can check that out, and you can see the Battle of L.A. in the full sequence. And I do want to express my condolences to Art.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, George.
I saw that on your website, by the way. Very kind of you.
All right, thank you.
You take care. Jose Escamilla. I'll be back now. A couple hours of open lines, plus I'm going to open up a hotline. I'll tell you about that when we come back.